Number 11A.
We started out yesterday to think in a hierarchical structure, and that has the advantage that one can get hold of a subject in a much more constructive and easier way. In doing that, we naturally have to keep to the hierarchy of the various levels that are built into a subject. And so this is what I want to try to point out this week, how really in this way we can get hold of a big subject like the subject of St. John. Therefore, I like to repeat, no matter if it's boring or not, I like to repeat the structure because I feel that this is a method that is helpful, and every new method is not always accepted right away. I would say that the main point which I always began to see all during my many years of teaching is that one should take time for each aspect within the structure so that we build on a sure and clear foundation, so that we have a foundation which we don't have to think about, but the foundation which is inbuilt in us, in our spiritual consciousness, which reacts spontaneously to any idea that applies to this very level. So that we go really that step which we always have pointed out in the educational program, that first we must study the letter clearly and must get the good concept building. That is absolutely necessary, that the letter is correct. So we need a concept building. But the danger is that we feel that if we have the right concept, that we achieved what has to be achieved. Whereas this is only the beginning, and so the next step is to really ponder that concept building and ponder it in a quiet way, in a way of adoring what we have learned in the concepts, in the new concept, of really seeing the deep value of it, so that something within grows in the nature of gratitude for these insights, and little by little, as we are pondering it and loving it and admiring it and standing in awe before it, little by little that letter becomes the spirit, it becomes tonality, so that the categories therefore have a kind of tonality. We hear the categories, we don't read the categories anymore in the text. We hear God speak, and that's especially one point that John brings out always, that we hear God speak and that we must hear him, spiritually hear him, in our innermost, there is somehow a voice, not a loud voice, not a voice that voices in letters or in words, but a voice that sounds through us, and is as definite really as letters or words can be. So that in pondering we really get the sense of tonality of these fundamental categories. And as we are getting the tonality and are culturing that tonality within us, something new happens, namely that becomes really our consciousness. We have a new consciousness, because we have said consciousness per se is neutral. It doesn't say anything about the quality of the consciousness. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy would make all these differences between a material consciousness or a spiritual consciousness, between a corporeal consciousness or a divine consciousness. So consciousness is something that has also to be cultured within us, so that it responds really to the divine, so that we have a divine consciousness, and therefore we build a consciousness that responds only to the divine and not to the erroneous thought and concept. So that finally we begin to see that this consciousness is building us, is our whole structure, is our own being, so that we feel more and more that the corporeal consciousness, the material consciousness which we have as mortals, begins to disappear, begins to fade away a little bit, and that within ourselves the beingness of those categories are coming out much clearer, much more definite, and act, so to say, by itself. So this is the method of dealing spiritually with these categories. But naturally, that needs that we see those categories. And so in order to see those categories, we have always to ask ourselves, what is the most fundamental category in the text? What is the secondary category? Then the third, what is after secondary, thirdly? What do you say? Third position category, and the fourth, and so on. Just as we had it also, if you remember, in the chapter on spiritualism, there for the first time, I think in the textbook, we touched the sense that there are so many categories built in that chapter that one had to sort them out so as to see what is the main category, what is the secondary category, what's in the third place and fourth place. I think we had about five different categories that were interwoven into the text of the chapter on spiritualism. So here too, we culture ourselves, and this is especially here important because it begins to touch the science of being. We are at that bridge where we bridge over from the Gospel of St. John over to Christian Science with its categories, and so we do well if we culture them in order. So we started out really to see what is the Gospel of John all about. Well, the highest point is really that it shows the science of Christianity. That's the main point. He was living at the period of Christianity, and the Gospel writers were showing Jesus as demonstrating Christianity, and John came along and said, there is something more about that than a Jesus demonstrating Christianity. There is a science about that Christianity. There is a way of understanding that Christianity. And that way of understanding is much more important than the story of Jesus himself. He is only a symbol, he is only an exemplar for that way of understanding. So we go deeper than just the outward accounts of Jesus' life and what he did. We go to that deep structure in the Bible that is the deepest structure as far as we can conceive of it in our century where we are living. And in this way, going deeper than just the Jesus story, we go to that basic category that is eternal, that is ever present, that is the categories which are today our categories on which we build. So if we take the subject of John as showing us really the science of Christianity, therefore Christianity as science, in which he wants to bring out that in the age of Christianity there came forth a man called Jesus who demonstrated the Christ idea. And so John wants to show what is that consciousness that man Jesus had. So it takes it out of the man Jesus into consciousness. What is the structure of understanding that Jesus had, on which he built? And that was John's great interest in that story. Therefore, we must see that what he wants to bring out is for the people and the reader of today is what is the Christ idea that is being born to us as science today? What is that Christ idea that has to be nurtured today as science, not only as a Jesus, that's no more so important, but the Christ idea as really the Christ science, the Christ signs, it's Christianity as science, the Christ signs depicted as an infinite calculus of divine ideas. So we would really see here that we are nurturing or pondering something that would bring about within us the birth of that Christ idea too, if we go along the way of understanding that is shown in the Christ science. Therefore, we see that this overall title, so to say, the Christ science or the divine infinite calculus, has then explanation through the candlestick order. So that was explained, that divine infinite calculus is being symbolized through the candlestick order through four parts, namely science as the Word, life and soul, science as the Christ, truth and spirit, science as Christianity, namely love and mind, and science as science, principle. So our first devotion would have to be to make sure that we get the rhythm of those four parts, that we really are not just memorizing those four parts and say, yes, signs as the Word are the numerals of infinity, then signs as the Christ are showing the calculus, signs as Christianity is the third dimension of the fourth dimension of spirit, and science as science, the omni-action of principle. This can be learned very quickly. There are four terms, but they are terms. So we have the letter there, we have the correct letter, then comes the pondering until we begin to realize what they spiritually mean so that they become our own identity. So my method would be that I spend quite some time every day next to all the other spiritual and ordinary work I have to do, to sit back for a moment over and over and say, now what does that really mean? What does it mean that I have to start with the numerals of infinity, that I have to start really with the Word, that I have to start, what is the Word, namely, they are all the ideas of the seven synonymous terms. These are the numerals of infinity, so that I can see, let's fill my thought always again and again with the elements, with the building blocks of reality as the numerals of infinity, or you could say with the ideas characterizing the seven synonymous terms. And so I begin to ponder, do I get the tonality of those seven synonymous terms through the ideas characterizing these seven synonymous terms? Then I would have to ponder and say, well, what have I got if I only know those building blocks? I haven't got really very much. I've got something very basic, very substantial, but not really very much, because those building blocks hinge together. They work together. They work together like stones in a mosaic. They work together to form a picture, a definite big picture, a mosaic. So I must see how each idea fits in into the whole. And therefore, I begin to realize that each idea must be related to every other idea. I begin to see that every idea works together with every other idea in order so that the whole picture is coming out in my consciousness, so that I have a feeling that I'm really looking now no more at a single idea, which is anyway a false concept, but that I look at the infinite blending and infinite reflection of the ideas of God, how they operate in a calculus of ideas. Then I get already a kind of a dynamic sense where I feel that what I entertain as numerals of infinity, what I entertain as ideas of the seven synonymous terms, that they begin to become dynamic. that they have a modus operandi within themselves, that they are not staying put, that they are not static, but that they are dynamic, that they are constantly at work and at work and at work. They operate and operate, so that I get a very dynamic sense of a universe of idea which is going on. And I come to the third, to the fourth dimension of spirit, which is a very critical point, where I begin to see that that happens only in the realm of spirit, in the fourth dimension of spirit. It doesn't have anything to do with the three-dimensional universe, which is limited, which is matter, which is forces, which is gravitation, which is space and time. These are the limits of the material universe, of a three-dimensional universe, so that my consciousness is aware that I should not trying to arrive at the material manifestation, at the material demonstration, that every demonstration must rest within the spiritual realm. Naturally, that leaves out various questions that I have, but at the moment I leave it out, because the lower levels then will answer all these questions later on. But first I must make sure, very sure, that what I want to demonstrate is the spiritual and not the improvement of matter. That this consciousness is striving at the spiritual solution of the establishment of a spiritual universe and not of an improved material universe. So that finally my thought goes further and I begin to see if that is so, then I can see that this is always a question of principle and never a question of my personality, never a question of my personal thinking, my personal opinions, or anything, or a personal wish, or a personal desire, personal aim, personal purpose, or anything like that, but that what is operating is only principle operating for its own glory. Principle operate to bring out the glory of principle. And then I have found a real good basis on which to work. So just I would feel this is a good method to get first a firm foundation of the fourfold calculus. Then we have seen that on a further layer we have the impact of absolute Christian science in science as truth and love, that we can see that actually this divine infinite calculus is triggered off, so to say, by truth and love every time that divine calculus is living or has its existence within the ideal truth, which is so complete that everything is there, that nothing is missing, so that it existed forever already in its perfection, love. So that truth and love play a great role in it, which says nothing has to be brought forth, because there is no life impulsion at that point there. At that point we only have truth and love, so nothing has to be brought forth. I must drop that sense at that point that something has to be impelled into the universe by life, by the eternal life, but that everything is already at the point of perfection, truth and love. That everything already is at the point of solution, of perfect solution, of ideal solution, truth, which is already established in its perfection, love. So I ponder about those two terms and ponder what is the office of those two terms when they apply to the candlestick order, to the science order. And so we have seen that if we go further from the four to the two, that those two bring much more characteristics and individual ideas to the fore. We have seen what does, in the first part, what does truth and love do? We have seen that truth in the first part shows that truth is not somewhere up on cloud nine, but wants to translate itself, to reveal itself constantly. It wants to express itself constantly. Without that attitude that truth reveals itself, we would never know anything about truth. We wouldn't know that truth exists. So it is in the inner nature of truth that it does reveal itself. This kills within us that false belief that we will not have any revelation, that we are not good enough to receive revelation, that revelation is something that can happen every few centuries or every period of thousand-year periods or something like that. It kills that sense of time and says, everyone that is open really to the numerals of infinity is also open for truth breaking into our consciousness and brings to us new inspiration, new revelation, so that everyone can take part in revelation. Then from the point of view of love, we have seen that love says yes, and this is so that you can be sure that that promise of revelation is going to be fulfilled. I love, am so to say, responsible that this revelation finds its fulfillment. You just have to go along with that revelation and let it happen within you and take it in within you. Then you will feel that this revelation is revealing itself until it is manifested to the fullest point, fulfilled point. Therefore, love fulfills what truth has revealed. If we go to the second part and see that signs as the Christ that wants to bring forth really the Christ idea as a science, it shows here from the standpoint of truth that actually this truth is not just up in heaven, but that it is not only in the realm of reality, of spiritual reality, but that it translates itself and manifests itself as translation right down to the human. And we get the very wonderful sense of translating that from the generality to the specifics, that the one truth, which is the general truth, translates itself to every one of the infinite individual truths, to every situation. And this gives us a great sense again of security and assurance that we don't have to do anything. All what we have to do is to accept first the word of God from truth and love, so that then the Christ has a chance to work, that we don't stand in the way to the Christ, so that the Christ has a chance to translate itself to the human consciousness and makes itself aware in the human consciousness, that it comes to us as the divine message from God to man and speaks to the human consciousness, that it speaks to the human consciousness as a new understanding or an exact understanding, as an ordered understanding of the Christ idea. From the point of view of love, then, we have seen that love there has a different office, that it says yes, and it is not so that in truth the Christ translates itself to you and you don't accept it. You build up a barrier against it, and that there is somewhere an opposition in you. It will break down all the opposition in you until within you there is something that says, and I will accept it, I will welcome it, I will also have that Christ idea. So love there is that which really shows that it forces the universal acceptance of the Christ idea. So also within myself we get that sense We don't have to do missionary work. We have to leave it to the Christ to do that missionary work, to leave it to the Christ who knows much better than we do where it finds a transparent mentality, where it finds acceptance, where it is welcome, and we have to let the Christ do his job the way the Christ wants to do it. It's not up to us to say, well, my husband should also come along, my wife should come along, my children should come along, my aunt, my uncle should come along, my grandchildren could come along and should have it, and this and that friend should know it. We see here that everyone has its own Christ, that with everyone it takes another turn, it takes another opportunity, it takes another time, it takes another situation in order that the Christ really will be accepted in the individual. The Christ is absolutely individual and has its individual way to pull through and to push through and to break through in every mentality until every mentality says, I also want that idea. I want this idea and claim and clamors for that idea. That is at the point of the Christ.